Welcome to Hack Your Company, an ongoing conversation that brings together security practitioners and those securing their company. Hosted by Drata's CISO, Ross Hosman, and the security team, we host transparent discussions with groups that are hacking into their brand's reputation, customer perception, and building trust through security and compliance. In each episode, we challenge our guests to take a step back, view their company from the outside in, and uncover how their brand is hacking trust. It's time to flip the script on hacking and break into what truly establishes trust. And now, on to your host, Ross.
Welcome to the Hack Your Company episode zero, the OG episode, as I guess we'll call it. My name is Ross Hosman. I'm the CISO here at Drata, and I have our security team with us today, as well as a future security team member. And so I will have them introduce themselves. Josh, would you like to start?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I'm Josh, the manager of information security here at Drata.
Hey, guys. Carmelo Tallmark here, security engineer at Drata.
Hey, my name is Shannon Johnson. I'm an IT engineer here at Drata.
But a future security engineer, right?
Most definitely.
Cool. Josh, you and I have worked together a few times. How would you compare working at Drata versus the other companies that we've worked at together?
Yeah, well, first off, like the market of the company. So going from like a major enterprise, huge company, one of the oldest companies like in the world, right, to startup is very different and has very different implications for the security program. And in my opinion, it's a lot more fun to work on a startup where you're working with the latest and greatest and bleeding edge technology.
Yeah, I really feel kind of like that family photo where they show the multiple generations. So like I'm the grandma, you know, and like it just goes down and Shannon's kind of the baby. And this is amazing to kind of see that generations in security work. Shannon, you recently crushed your AWS and CISSP. As a matter of fact, the entire team is AWS certified. What was your motivation? And like you did this pretty rapidly, one right after another. How were you able to study? How did you prioritize all this? And how did you get it done? Because it's pretty amazing what you did.
Thank you. There was a three-week gap between my AWS and CISSP pass. And the big thing there is I had actually taken the CISSP last year and I did not pass. I had been studying for it for about a year at that point. So this was about 2 years in the making and AWS was about a 6 month study effort. And there's a lot of time involved in studying for certifications. There's a lot of theories around, you know, our certs for experts, our certs for a foot in the door. And the way that I approach certification is a metric for am I on the right track for the things I'm trying to learn and become an expert in eventually? So for me, certs are just the beginning.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, I've insisted that our team does is go get AWS certified. And if Josh remembers, I also made my entire JP Morgan cloud security team go get AWS certified. And the reason being is we want our security team to be just as knowledgeable as the engineering teams that they work with. So when they're designing solutions or working with those teams, they have a good understanding of how things work. In so many other security teams that I've seen, you have the security people coming to the engineers and saying, you need to do it this way without understanding how cloud works or how things are built. And it frustrates the engineering team because it's like, well, we can't do it that way. We can't build it that way because of X, Y, and Z. And so I think it's been a big thing for our team and the cooperation we have with our engineering team. And, you know, they love us because we do have that knowledge. Carmelo, you transitioned from IT into security. What's that transition been like for you? And what are your thoughts for anyone that has done that or is going to do that transition?
Yeah, a transition wasn't entirely difficult. I'd say that having a manager like you and Josh, provide me with the resources to like slowly transition to that role. So like making us get our AWS certifications, and also having, you know, the long background in IT that helped me build my way to that this role, and kind of understanding how those technologies worked helped me transition to security role.
General question for you all. What's your favorite security sales buzzword these days? You all know which ones make me cringe. The shadow IT makes me cringe. I heard somebody say shadow liability. That made me cringe even harder. Do you have any favorites that you're seeing sales teams come out with or anything like that?
I'd say military grade encryption or infrastructure. That's always an interesting one I see out there.
Yeah, so there's a term that I struggle with, actually, because of it's so important for security teams to interface with the rest of the company in a way that's cooperative and trust-based. And so zero trust, that term, using that internally, I think can be a dangerous thing. Similarly to your internal auditors, you know, having a struggle where your compliance people that are trying to get you ready for an audit can sometimes be confused for external auditors. I think sometimes those terms can turn off a company to their security team. So I think they should be used sparingly.
Yeah, speaking of zero trust, it's kind of funny because I'm giving a talk about zero trust at the Rocky Mountain Information Security Conference on Wednesday. And if you look at how this is laid out, Rob Reck, the CISO of Red Canary, his entire track is trust. And then mine right afterwards is zero trust. So there are going to be jokes around trusting no one and everything like that. But speaking of zero trust, yeah, it's one of those phrases that I feel has been branded really poorly, right? Like it's kind of saying the opposite of what you want it to do. And, you know, we have implemented a zero trust approach here at Drata for a lot of the things that we do, right? Josh, would you like to speak to kind of how we've thought about our quote unquote zero trust approach or absolute trust approach? I don't know what we want to rebrand this as.
The key principle is just not blindly trusting anything, right? So constantly re-verifying, and it goes way beyond just identity now. So one of the things that I'm super excited about is like device trust and device posture checks. So in addition to verifying your identity with an identity provider, also making sure that your device is up to our security standards too, and it's trusted.
Yeah, and we're taking it as far as to even get rid of TOTP tokens or one-time passcodes, right? Because those can be phished. So we're going to, you know, YubiKeys, WebAuthn, FIDO, Hush, and stuff like that, where you can't actually fish that kind of credential. So that's where we're taking it. Where do you all get your security information? Where do you read about the latest trends, or how do you keep up to date?
Some sources that I leverage are Ars Technica. I think they're a reliable reporting source. I also take a look at like the Mac admin Slack channel, another reliable one, as well as the Windows one. Like people are constantly posting the latest like security breaches or, you know, newest technology. So it helps me keep up to date with the latest.
I would say Slack workspaces are incredibly valuable to anybody that's kind of starting out or wants to keep up. The Mac admins one is great. There's a lot of specific security ones. So feel free to hit me up and I'll get you invited to some of them. But there's a lot of great resources and great people that you can collaborate with in these Slack workspaces. I'd also say, you know, Hacker News, Bleeping Computer, The Register, stuff like that are really good resources around security information.
Like the thing is, there's no one like perfect source of news. So having just like a feed of all these multiple sources is what I rely upon, whether it's in a Slack channel or I have Discord channels that also have these news feeds and stuff like that.
Yeah. Josh, you know, we have focused on automation a lot. You used to work at JP Morgan Chase with me, and we focused a lot on automation there as well. I feel, you know, with how we were doing Terraform and things like that, we have a really good automation story. And now we're about to take it to the next level which is automated remediation, right? Or at JP Morgan, we branded it guardrails with gun turrets, right? Because if you deployed anything that shouldn't be there, it should die, and it should die within 60 seconds. What are your thoughts around how teams should kind of slowly implement that automated remediation piece so they're not breaking things? How would you set it up?
Yeah, I guess even going back before getting to the point of being ready for automated remediation, I think shifting left is really important. So automating your security checks during development so that hopefully most things don't even make it to production where you do need the automated turret guns to shoot it down is way more cost efficient and developer efficient and all of that. So I think that is a great place to start. But once you are at the point of automated remediation for like production resources, I think focusing on the really big impact ones that have a really clear path to solution is probably the best place to start. We're still learning what that means for us and how we're doing that, but some examples would be a new S3 bucket that pops up that's publicly accessible and has sensitive data or something that should be locked down immediately unless specifically authorized to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. I've attended a number of CISO dinners and talked about the concept of, hey, if a instance doesn't meet the tagging standards and it pops up, it should die. And I've had so many CISOs say, no, I want to alert and I want somebody to kind of go take an action based off of that alert. And to me, I feel that, hey, that's too long of a time, right? In cloud now, people could be spinning up instances and your data can be gone so quickly and leave your environment so quickly. I'd rather have an automated remediation there to take care of it. And it's interesting to me that so many people are terrified of that concept because what happens if I break something in production? I've always said you should be breaking it in staging, right? And if you're following a proper development model, if it breaks in staging, your developers are going to be okay. Every engineering leader I've talked to actually loves this, right? They say, hey, yeah, if you break it in staging and you told me why it broke, I am okay with that. I am okay with that every time. And if we look at our engineering team and our CTO and, you know, talk to them about it, they have the same mindset. Break it in staging, give us the feedback and the pipeline, and that would be great. That's my thoughts on it. Shannon, outside of work, you do some pretty intense physical activity in Spartan. As a matter of fact, I believe you just did one in Vermont. What drives you to do those? What's your passion around those? Because you do quite a few of them every year.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in that old adage that the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. And to relate it back to like my interest in cybersecurity and the pursuit of a master's degree in cyber with an untraditional undergrad, I don't have a STEM undergrad. I was an international studies undergraduate and I decided to pursue a technology master's degree. And so I think the reason that I chose cybersecurity is because it's such a heavily research-based, cutting-edge field. And just like constantly pushing yourself physically, pushing yourself mentally to be constantly learning new things and researching things very much falls into the same category of behavior overall, I think.
Gotcha. Follow-up question here. You've come to Drata from kind of a DoD background. How is that change for you? You know, DoD is typically a little bit slower moving, things like that. How have you felt that change and what are the things that you've had to personally change to adapt?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, most of my IT background is as a DoD contractor. And so I would say that the major differences for me are very strict adherence to technology and just general hierarchies within the DoD. And because of that, I believe that is the cause of the slow moving beast that everyone talks about when it comes to like technology. I would also say to the DoD's credit that a lot of the slow moving technology is because of security. The more you take on cutting edge technologies, the more hardcore your security teams have to be to really heavily vet those technologies. And so I think that's why the DoD tends to stay behind a little bit for both of those reasons. As far as adapting to a startup, so there's so much difference there. So I think one of the major draws for me is that you'll find oftentimes with the DoD, you're working alongside people who are just absolute experts in fields they just really don't necessarily care about because they were placed there. And when it comes to like startup culture, you're going to be working alongside absolute diehard enthusiasts. And I would say that is probably the main draw for me and the reason that I made the transition.
Carmille, kind of the same question to you. You came from a managed service provider background. How has the transition been? What's different and how have you adapted?
I'd say the transition was kind of a big undertaking and you're kind of managing so many different clients and you aren't able to provide like sound solutions to them. You're kind of just like at their beck and call. Or I feel like here at Drata, I was given the opportunity to come up with solid solutions and get buy-in from other people from other departments. And that helped me excel. Whereas in, you know, MSP, you're being at everyone's beck and call, there's a lot of burnout and you're constantly working long hours and you're doing like piecemeal solutions and it's just causing bigger issues down the road. Whereas here we're, you know, we spend the time to figure out a solution and make sure everyone has buy-in on it. And it helps us long-term as a company and help us go further.
Question for all three of you. What do you feel that our security ethos is at the company? I'd like you all to go first and then I'll give my impression. Shane, why don't you kick us off?
It's kind of a tough one. So I would definitely say that my greatest takeaway from working with you specifically, Ross, is that security has to be functional. So functional security, your organization is a business and they need to function like a business. And so security has to be in tandem, constantly interwoven with that. Yeah, functional security.
I'd say transparency is a big thing. I do recall like during the interview process and when you interviewed me and that's kind of what you told me about the ethos of the company was. And I remember coming on board and trying to make sure that I was very transparent with our users about changes. I always sought your approval on different communications we're going to send out. I think that's helpful within an organization because you don't want your end users to feel like they're being forced to do things. You want to communicate those changes to them and help them understand like why are you doing this as like a security and IT team. So I definitely say transparency is one of our biggest things.
I mean, one of the things that I like to say is that we truly are a security company. And by that, I mean, I've been asked, like, are we just a technology company that happens to be in the space of automating security and compliance? But I think like we are truly a company that puts security first. And it's awesome that just the culture internally is everybody's up to date with security news and things like that. Yeah, I think that says a lot about kind of our ethos on security.
Yeah, I agree. I think you all had great ones. I think the other things that we really try and instill into our security team and to our company is we will do the right thing, always. We will take and make smart risk-based decisions, right? We won't take dumb risks. We will take smart risks and we will have those discussions. And, you know, it always comes down to we will always protect our customers first, our employees second, and our business third, because without customers, we don't have a business. Without employees to help those customers or build the product, we don't have a business. And so the business actually comes last when we're thinking about security and what the business wants. We have to think about the security of the customer and our employees before the business. And so that's kind of how I think about it. So you all have been at Drata for a while. We're building this awesome product. You've seen that we're really also trying to push trust, right? We have our trust center. We're providing real-time status so that people can see that our customers who use Trust Center are actually passing the controls they say they do and stuff like that. When you think about trust, what makes you trust a security product vendor? And you guys all see a lot of security vendors every quarter, right? What makes you trust one and what makes you distrust one immediately? Josh, why don't you kick us off on this one?
Transparency is a huge thing because it's one thing for someone to say they are doing something, but if they are confident enough to show us like the control in real time, that is a huge thing for me. And yeah, I have kind of seen that already. So it is really cool that we have a product that's doing that, enabling people to be transparent.
So more broadly though, as you look at a new vendor in a new space, right? What makes you trust one vendor over another?
So like their security program as a whole is very important. So We do have a third-party risk management process in which we do look for specific requirements. And so meeting those requirements is essential. And if one company is meeting them and another company is not, definitely trust the security posture of the company that's meeting them over the one that's not.
Yeah, for sure. What about in their products though? So you're looking at a vendor that, you know, there's two vendors, they kind of have the same product. Is there anything that will push you to one vendor over another around either how they present themselves or how they, you know, work with you as you're kind of going through that evaluation criteria?
Yeah. So the thing that I mentioned before about like actually being a security company, I don't know how to exactly categorize it, but you could tell when a company truly puts security first in their program and their business versus a company who happens to be like in the security vendor space, but is really just a tech company providing a service. So gotcha. That's a big one for me.
Yeah, to piggyback off of that. So one thing I also look is at the kind of security features that they offer in their product. So whether they have SSL or if they have multi-factor authentication, those are helpful in determining if we'll go with that vendor or not. That shows that they care about security and whether they're also hiding that behind, you know, the higher subscription tier as well. That's something big that seems to be happening a lot is that they hired, you know, additional security features behind the enterprise subscription, which is pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, so I think those are really good points on the technical side. I think Josh and Carmel pretty much covered that. I would also give a little plug to the representation. So the salespeople that you interface with, the people who show you the demos. Yeah, it goes back to what Josh said about transparency. If the product is being represented well, I mean, you could say it's just that employee and not the company or the product itself, but it's all one piece as far as I'm concerned. Good products should have good representatives and it should be pervasive throughout the entire company.
Yeah, one of the things that I will say that I'm big on that you all have seen is show us. Okay, you say all this stuff. Now show us actually how it works, right? I want to see it in a live demo. And I want to see it in a live demo in the first meeting that I have with you. I don't want to do a discovery call and then another call. And then maybe you'll see a demo on the third one. And it's something that we at Drata really pride ourselves in as well, right? Like our sales team, who are awesome, ensure that the customer actually sees the product in that first call. And to me, that's the way to do it. So many other organizations are switching to this like multi-touch type thing. And I can't do it. First of all, I don't have the time. We don't have the time really. And secondly, like a lot of people make a lot of claims around their products, right? Like it's, oh, we do all these things. And then when you start going, okay, now show me this. Oh, it doesn't have that yet, but it's coming. And it's no. So I'm very much a show me the product. I want to touch it. I want to feel it. I want to like, you know, make sure it does what you say it does. How do you all feel that the company sees our security team? Do you think they see it as a blocker, an enabler, something that protects them? What are your all thoughts? Shannon, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that Drata celebrates its security team like crazy, especially, you know, in marketing and just like all the different departments. We're trusted. They come to us to ask questions. You know, if they think something's weird, they're not afraid to look dumb to ask. It's a fantastic culture of security, as Josh has previously mentioned. And so I think that they see us as allies.
That's a really good way to put it. What are your thoughts, Carmel?
Yeah, I agree with that. And coming from a background of MSPs and higher education, where IT was kind of seen as a crutch and people saw them as the enemy. And it's nice to see at Drata, like people see us as a resource, an ally, and they rely on us for things because, you know, if they're unsure in something, they want job test to make sure and verify. So it's definitely nice to see that coming from a background where, you know, you're constantly having to fight with different departments to get things done because they didn't see you as an ally.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are definitely an enabler. I think really any security team should strive to be that over blocker. There are definitely scenarios where you will have to say no to something, but rather than just flat out saying no, it's very important to have an alternative solution suggestion in place and work with the team to get that moving forward. I think the other really awesome thing you pointed out before is like requiring AWS certifications so that we are as knowledgeable as the engineering team. I think a few weeks ago when I was pitching an idea, one of the engineers was like really impressed that the security team is suggesting using like the latest, newest feature rather than kind of being years behind on what's going on.
Shannon, you touched on something that I think is really important around people feeling like they can ask questions, even if they feel that it may be a dumb question. I think that's really important that we as a company have set that kind of culture. And this is something that our CEO, Adam, has really focused on, that people shouldn't be afraid to ask a question, even if they think it's a dumb question. And I routinely will ask dumb questions as well, because I'm not afraid to look dumb. And if the leadership and the rest of our leadership will do the same, is willing to do that, then any employee should be able to do that, right? We're a fully remote company. You know, we have a tiny little engineering office, but we're fully remote. What challenges do you all see that brings to security and IT? And how do you see us solving those challenges?
I guess it's more just different challenges, because when you have, you know, infrastructure and you're in charge of securing that infrastructure, then you have to have an expanded team that's focused on physical security and various different aspects therein. So I think it's just different. I don't really, maybe this is just my level of experience, but I would say that maybe it's not more difficult. Maybe it's just different.
Yeah, I agree. It is different. And in my opinion, for the better. I would much rather be solving new remote workforce problems like zero trust than solving physical security problems. So I'm glad we are fully remote.
Yeah, to add to that, I think availability, like being fully remote, like you can easily access people than rather having to be in the office and like trying to go to IT and then not being available. And coming from a college years ago, where if something was wrong with the server, you'd have to drive all the way to the office to go and reboot it. Whereas now we can log into our infrastructure kind of from anywhere and do any troubleshooting that we need. So definitely different problems arise, but definitely for the better.
Yeah, one of the things that I really love about being fully remote is we can hire the best talent. In the past, it has always frustrated me that at certain companies, you can hire the best person for this job as long as they live in New York, or as long as they live in St. Louis, or as long as they live here. And it's, wow, that is really hard. Am I getting the best people? And also, are these people happy, right? I did my stint in New York, it wasn't my city, and I'd rather be happy, right? And to me, having happy employees that can work from wherever they want, basically, is just such a benefit to a company as a whole. I'm really excited about it. I think for the challenges it brings us is, you know, as we design solutions, we're a company that doesn't want to run servers, right? Our servers are to run our product. It's not to run our internal security or internal IT stuff. It is for us, we'd rather design solutions and work with partners that are experts in this space. And Josh, you kind of mentioned, you know, our zero trust approach around, you know, we use Okta and Cloudflare and a number of other companies that we could scale to 1,000 employees tomorrow and not have a single issue, right? Where a lot of companies that were kind of more traditional, they have all these VPN concentrators and stuff like that, where during COVID, they collapsed, right? They couldn't get new hardware and things like that, where we have designed solutions that, you know, are infinitely scalable. And we've seen that, right? When I joined this company, you know, last July, we were 30 something people. We're now 300 something people, right? And that's extreme growth because we have extreme customer growth because we're the best solution on the market. Yeah, that's my thought on it. I want to talk a little bit about, this is episode zero. You know, I envision we're going to be talking a lot of about security and compliance and things like that. We already have another episode talking about red teaming that's coming. What do you all think we should cover in the Hack Your Company? One of the areas that I'm thinking about, Shannon, you mentioned this previously, is treating your security team like a business, right? And how do you do that? But what are your all thoughts? What would you like to see covered in that?
there are so many cool and interesting new security topics. Like you did kind of bring up what are some of the buzzwords in the industry before. I think one we didn't get to is like supply chain security. I think that's a really big one relevant to all companies. As you mentioned, using SaaS companies is such an enabler at this point. So really making sure all of your vendors are secure and your whole supply chain. It's an interesting new problem.
As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of emerging technologies and Web3 and all that jazz. And I think that talking about AR security, things like, you know, obviously crypto has been really big in the news lately and fairly unregulated security around that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then AI technologies that mimic, like for deepfakes and voice mimicry, things like that, are going to become a really big issue moving forward.
Yeah, you've actually kind of been looking at this from a red team perspective around using voice fakes, right? Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of the companies that I've interviewed so far, they work with major production studios, both in Hollywood and game development. And the idea there is, and the way that they've packaged their products so far is, you know, like it's easier to take a signature from a celebrity and then be able to just type in whatever you want them to say than it is to have them just do take after take because you're paying by the hour for that celebrity. So that's the major use case that I'm seeing. And then for one of them, they were able to translate your voice into multiple languages. I think what I'm finding, and I'm actually surprised to find, is that a lot of these companies are moving into a space of just now learning about the ethics of their software that they've created and the power for good or evil. And yeah, I think that there's some very interesting, you know, emerging ideas about how to combat that kind of or detect certain kinds of signatures is going to be a big thing.
So I think we talked about it a little before, the constant monitoring. So using like trust.jai.com where people can constantly see your client's standpoint. One thing that bothered me recently, I was looking at a consumer product and I wanted to check like what they were using for security. And there was nothing on their website pointing to what they were doing for security. Not on their privacy page. I had to reach out via email and it took like weeks to get a response. And this application plugs into all my different like social media accounts. And I should know what you guys are doing for security because you have access to all my information. So I'd like to see more availability of, you know, security information on companies. Like that should be right up front on your website or it should be easily available.
Another question for you all. What is your biggest challenge as you've been doing cybersecurity? And I'll share mine at the end. But what's your biggest challenge? What do you feel are the big things? I guess I'll go first, actually. My biggest challenge is people. The technology is easy, right? Relatively easy. Implementing solutions and coming up with designs that keep our companies secure, that's the easy part. But in a lot of companies, people and convincing them is the harder part, right? Like, why can't I just bring my laptop and do all the things that I want to do because I like my Windows machine? Why can't I do this thing that, you know, would make my life easier? You're telling me I can't. And I think convincing people and coming up with ways to engage with people is a really good thing that a lot of security people haven't learned, right? They just, as Josh, you kind of alluded to earlier, they're just like, no, you can't do that. Where a lot of times we say the why, right? Or we say, hey, you could do this. You could make this decision. However, you're going to put this and this at risk. Are you sure you want to make that decision, right? And so learning how to convince people and talk to people around security, I think is such an important skill to learn. And it's also the hardest thing to do, right? At least for me. What do you all think?
Yeah, I'd definitely piggyback off that and say explaining the why. And I feel like sometimes I try to go way too specific of I'll search for the exact control number in a specific framework to give them. But I think a lot of the like reasons for making security decisions do apply kind of at a higher level. So I'm still trying to get better at that.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of been a long-standing issue, especially working in higher ed, where I had some supervisors who would implement changes without notifying people. And I kind of push back saying, no, you have to inform our users and you need to educate them on why we are making these decisions. And people do appreciate that when you take the time to explain it to them. They don't want to feel like they're just being forced into a corner. So yeah, I think taking the time to explain those security postures and will definitely benefit you in the long term.
Since the big one has been stated, yeah, definitely user education. And then I would say just from some of our recent efforts and investigations on things, auto remediation is a challenge. And it's not necessarily a challenge because the technology doesn't exist or can't be created to auto remediate. It's more that infrastructures, I think companies have trouble building out of the box products that can auto remediate when there's no standard built for a software company or infrastructure. And without some standardization there, it's very much a unified effort for each company's security team, I think, to build an auto remediation stack, I guess.
Cool.
I think another really tough thing with that, very relevant to auto remediation, is like false positives, right? So if you build out a solution that's doing auto remediation, you really can't have false positives. Like if you accidentally auto remediate a production service that wasn't supposed to be and you take it down, that is not good. And I just feel like the false positives in security are already very high, and that's relevant across all kind of security tools.
Last question here. We all are a bunch of nerds. You guys are way nerdier than I am, but we're a bunch of nerds and we love technology. Right. And we're really passionate about it. What was your journey like to get into this role? What are the things that you're super nerdy about and super passionate about? And just tell us a little bit about your journey to Drata here.
Yeah, I always like saying my journey started like very early. I remember when I was very little telling people, when they would ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? I wanted to be a hacker. Right. And I think that is really cool and super relevant, because in security, you do need to have that kind of offensive security mindset. So even if I'm not red teaming on the daily, those skills are super valuable just to be in the security industry.
So I'll go next. So one important thing I learned along the way, I think, is one thing that Drata does really well is automation. I remember getting my first start as like a desktop support specialist, and I just had started using things like Jamf and seeing what it could do. And one thing my boss got into my head is like, how can we start automating, you know, the enrollment of computers or as they come in? And that's when I started learning about APIs. And it was kind of a fun little project for me. Like, it was like a weekend project. And I just started looking at Jamf's API, seeing how I could automate naming computers, making sure software is installed, like as they're coming in from Apple, like they're enrolling correctly. So that helped me like build that foundation, learning how these SaaS applications work and how you can leverage APIs to automate some of the tasks with these SaaS applications. So I think that was beneficial in bringing me to where I am now and understanding the tech stack.
Yeah, that's a long and winding road. So my interest in technology started very young. I've been a gamer since I can remember being a person. And then I would, you know, pull apart my electronics and, you know, then in my late teens, customize my MySpace page and all that stuff. And then, you know, after I got my undergrad, I became a fiber optic field technician and both installed and programmed ROTAMs worldwide. And it was a really interesting marriage between light and color technology, which I'm an artist. I have always been obsessed with color and light, and like the learning the physics of that and how it can carry data just blew my mind. I couldn't get enough. And at the same time, I was exploring security as a topic because I myself, you know, found myself running credit reports and changing my passwords. And I had a list of everything I had ever signed into and, you know, would do rotations. And so I was very much interested in that aspect. And then, you know, I think my journey to cybersecurity, as well as Drop, kind of in line with the international studies thing, like a lot of that was about people. And, you know, social engineering is such a huge topic in cybersecurity. I think a lot of the time the focus is very technical, and it should be. But I also think that, I mean, the suavest person in the world can, you know, convince someone to pass over some information. I think all of those kind of converged for me. And so I went from fiber optic tech to an admin of various different technologies in different departments of the Air Force. And then I got the opportunity because a CISO reached out to me, you know, gave me an opportunity to work as an IT engineer to gain the skills on layer 7 so that I could move into a security position here. And that's the story.
Yeah, my story is a similar one, but I used to spend so many nights on IRC, Internet Relay Chat. For our younger audience, it's the thing that was here before Slack or Discord. It's still a thing. You can still go find IRC servers, but you know, being on FNet and stuff like that, where you know, you used to take over people's popular channel names and you would program egg drop bots and stuff like that, really got me interested in security. And I learned a lot from a lot of different people. I also learned you do not mess with phone freakers. Never mess with a phone freaker or your phone can ring for 3 days. But for me, kind of learning that, and then I really loved networking. I love the idea of this connected world and the idea that we have cables that go across the Atlantic is just phenomenal, right? And so for me, I started out kind of in a networking company called Savvis, and it allowed me to learn so much around security and network attacks and things like that. And I had two amazing mentors, one named Don Bertier, who was the CISO at Savvis, and another, Mark Buchanan, who was my direct boss and a director. It had a profound impact on my life and how I think about security. And they really taught me how to think about things logically. But they also taught me probably the most important thing that I feel every security person has to learn. What are your hills to die on? And where are your red lines? And Josh, you and I had a talk about this the other day in your one-on-one around what are the things that you hold that cannot be crossed, right? And I think that's different for every person as well as company. And a lot of times we have to judge it based off of the risks that the company are willing to take. For me, there are certain red lines that we will not cross, right? We will not make a bad decision that puts our customers at risk is one of those things, right? And luckily, we've never had to have that discussion because we're a security-focused company. But at previous companies, I've had to, right? And that's not a great situation to be in. But through this kind of journey of working for big networking companies or tech companies or banks, where Josh and I came from, you get a lot of different experience and a lot of different perspectives around security and risk and compliance and things like that. And one of the things I would say is, as people kind of move through their security or compliance careers, go try different industries. Don't just stay in one. It'll give you a different kind of view of the world. What do you think about that, Josh, as you've come from bank to startups and everything like that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think depending on the industry and the business, there's going to be different levels of risk and just totally different approach to security.
Yeah, I want to thank you all. I really appreciate you joining me for episode 0. I'm still going to refer to it as the OG episode to Elliot's demise or detestment. I appreciate you all, and I look forward to having you all kind of join me in some of these episodes going forward, especially as we cover topics that you're really passionate about. I would love for you to be in them. You know, there's an episode that I can think about in the future around AR security, right? That would be a very cool topic to talk to somebody from Meta about. And I hope we can get somebody like that. So Shannon, you can join us there. Or thank you, everyone. Have a great rest of your day and have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to Hack Your Company, a Drata podcast. Your hosts have been Ross Hosman and the Drata security team. To learn more about Hack Your Company, go to drata.com/HYC, subscribe to our newsletter Trusted, or join our community Secured.